Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
And welcome to Pole Position, the motorsport show here on Rock Sport Radio. It's Andy Alston with you alongside Adam Todd, broadcasting live on DAB Digital Radio across Central Scotland, online and on TuneIn. So on the show this week, Hamilton stays strong as Ferrari get it wrong, Ducati feeling fine at a track where they could shine, and Loeb's back again as Mikkelsen feels the pain. All this and more on Pole Position. Now, Mercedes driver Lewis Hamilton took his fourth win of the season at the Monaco Grand Prix last weekend, holding off Red Bull's Max Verstappen for around 60 laps on the wrong set of tyres, with Valtteri Bottas taking the final step on the podium. Now, Adam, obviously, Monaco isn't an easy place to overtake at the best of times, but credit to Lewis, he managed to keep Max at bay on the wrong tyres as well.
Yeah, Lewis did a very strong race. Max Verstappen, he's probably the one guy you don't want behind you when you are struggling on a set of tyres. But Monaco's the perfect track to keep people at bay. Lewis Hamilton, he was very smart. He was going to the middle of the track where he could, really restricting any opportunity Verstappen had. And you could see that just when Verstappen was closing in through the corners, especially at the hairpin, you know, Hamilton was just able to extend his lead along those straights. So it was really a great game of cat and mouse, actually. And I thought it was a classic Monaco Grand Prix. I really enjoyed watching it. Very dramatic, but I have to say, Max Verstappen, you know, he really did light up that race, and I was glad that he got into that second place, albeit he had the 5 second penalty for the pit stop incident with Valtteri Bottas. But Hamilton, Verstappen, you know, we want more of that. Mercedes have had it far too easy this season, so it was good to see a team take the fight to Mercedes.
And Mercedes, their run of 1-2 finishes, of course, coming to an end with Ferrari's Sebastian Vettel basically inheriting second place after that incident with Verstappen at the pits, as you mentioned. So Ferrari and Vettel might be happy enough with that. I mean, there seemed to be a suggestion at some point during the race that Vettel could go on and win it.
Yeah, I had a few people, I was at the race and a few people were suggesting that to me. I never saw it coming, just because I felt unless Verstappen took out Hamilton in both of them, which, you know, wasn't beyond the realms of possibility. But, you know, again, for Ferrari, I mean, they were behind the Red Bull in terms of pace and behind Mercedes in terms of pace, so they were a little bit lucky to inherit that second place. So I think, Ferrari's struggles really continue.
So it was another tough weekend for Ferrari, with the pressure mounting behind the scenes after another strategy mistake cost Charles Leclerc any chance of a good result on home soil. So joining us on Pole Position to talk more about this, I'm delighted to say, is Luke Smith from Crash.net. And Luke, things just seem to be going from bad to worse for Ferrari.
They do, yeah. I think after such a difficult start to the season and struggling to match Mercedes for pace as much as they have, I think you kind of look to their operations and things like that as areas they can make up that gap and get an upper hand. It's something that Mercedes did so effectively last year, knowing that even if they weren't quicker than Ferrari, they could outthink them or outplay them. But even on that level, Ferrari just continue to make mistakes and continue to make errors. And a really, really difficult weekend for them. That again, they'll be coming away maybe with, as you said, an inherited second-place finish and a best result of the season so far. But, I mean, their issues just continue to grow and grow and grow.
And look, now, teams need to make big calls in qualifying all the time, and yes, every now and then they got caught out, but the problem was that this was the worst place possible for that to happen for Ferrari last weekend.
It was, yeah, and they explained on Saturday evening after qualifying, and Mattia Binotto called a press briefing purely to explain what had happened. And he said that basically that they'd looked at the delta time that they thought would be good enough to get them through to Q2, and that they were happy with what Charles Leclerc had did. But they didn't factor in the fact that drivers seem to be improving on their second runs on each tyre. They'd be able to do a push lap, have a cool down lap, and then have another lap that would be even quicker. So the rate of improvement was really, really huge. And they just didn't play it safe enough. And there wasn't really anything to gain by keeping Leclerc in and saving a set of tyres. We saw in Spain that even Mercedes, even when they weren't putting a fresh set of softs onto their cars, it didn't really matter. There were three laps old, so it didn't make a huge amount of difference. And, yeah, it's just a big, big error that they made. Ironically, the day before, Ferrari had given a sort of lecture-style lesson to journalists talking about strategy and Monaco, how you've got to be careful, you've got to leave more margin and play it safer. And they just didn't follow their own advice, it seems, and that left them in a really bad spot.
No, incredible looking. And, you know, the trouble for me isn't necessarily the incident with Leclerc, but it's the number of mistakes that Ferrari are making. And there seemed to be a suggestion from some fans of the sport that this is quite a young Ferrari team behind the scenes. You know, there's maybe not too many people in senior roles with experience compared to years gone by, but surely they would begin to learn from the number of errors that they're making, Luke.
You'd believe so, yeah. And I think, yeah, it is true. It is a very young team. Mattia Binotto said that himself. He said it's something to remember, that it will take time to gel and to develop. But there is, I think, some serious bolstering that they need to do to their senior management. Ultimately, Binotto, he did step up from the role of chief technical director to team principal. But his role, his previous role, wasn't exactly filled, so he's kind of spreading himself across too. He's addressed that himself and said that it's not an issue, that he is fully focused and it's not a problem. But you do kind of look at the team and think that there is a need for more proper leaders. So it's a long, long way away from the times you had Jean Todt and Ross Brawn and Rory Byrne all working together so, so closely. You've got Binotto, you've got Laurent Mekies, who himself is only a year or so into the role. There's a need for, I think, more leaders at Ferrari to really step up and help the team, because right now it doesn't look clear who is making the decision.
Do you think Ferrari fans are expecting too much from Mattia Binotto, Luke?
I think so, yeah. I think he's not going to come in and do anything overnight. I think that was always going to be very difficult. I think the pre-season testing display did maybe fans some hopes, and that did sort of play things up a little bit, that he was going to come in and fix everything. But it takes time for anyone to have a proper impact. We saw that at McLaren with Zak Brown when he came in. It took, I mean, really the best part of 2 years for him to actually get the team as he wanted it and to make the changes he needed. And the same would be true for Binotto, I think, that he just needs time to put everything into place. But, I mean, I've seen suggestions on Twitter saying, oh, Binotto out, and what's he doing? And it's ridiculous. I think he's proven throughout his 25 years with Ferrari just how good he is. And now he's in the top job. He's risen up all the ranks. He knows that team better than anyone. And I think he can be the person to lead the team and turn it back around. But it's going to take time. It's not going to be fixed within 6 races.
Look, what I always say is that this is a very different Ferrari to the one that was so successful during the Michael Schumacher years. You know, politically, it's a very different beast as well. There's different pressures on the team at the top level too.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's something that does have to be remembered, that it's a long way away from Luca de Montezemolo being so clear as the chairman and leading. And I think that it was maybe moving back that way with Sergio Marchionne. His intention was to, at 65, retire from Fiat Chrysler, and then he could put his heart and soul and all his focus into Ferrari, and that was going to be his obsession. And I think the sort of aftermath of Marchionne's sad passing, I think that does have to be considered, that obviously Luigi Camilleri, he is in place, but there are sort of questions about what his role is, and in terms of John Elkann also being there as president. Again, it's not really clear who is the top dog, who is number one and who is in charge. So there's a lot, I think, for Ferrari to really consider, and I think a lot that has to be taken into account, because, it's not as clear as it was, I think, for Ferrari back in the early 2000s, as you say, and even a team like Mercedes nowadays, where it's so obvious, like, who the buck stops with, that isn't clear with Ferrari.
Hi Luke, Adam here. Now, Charles Leclerc said after qualifying that he was going to take a few chances to try and make his way through the field, but I have to say that move in Nico Hülkenberg at Raskas, it was optimistic, but then again, he had little option due to the position he started through the fault of his team.
It's true, yeah, and he said after qualifying on Saturday that he knew he had to be aggressive and he had to try and fight his way through. And he did that very effectively to begin with. He put a lovely pass on Lando Norris. And then he started having a look at Lars Gas when he was trying to get past Grosjean. And already we were kind of thinking, oh, not sure about that. It's a tricky place to get through. He made it work on Grosjean brilliantly. But then I think just got a bit too optimistic with Hülkenberg, hit the wall, and that ruined his race, and that ended his race. And he has to take full blame for that. And I think that's, again, just a bit of experience there would have told him to maybe be a little bit more patient and to bide his time a little bit more. Monaco is a hard place to pass. You do need to take your chances. But I think we saw in the Formula 2 race over the weekend that if you try and get through there and you make a mistake, it is costly. It's very, very hard to get it right. So, yeah, I think that was sort of his inexperience showing a little bit there.
And look, a lot of people were suggesting that Ferrari were the team to beat this season and had the quicker car. I mean, at pre-season testing, there was this idea that Ferrari could even be up to half a second quicker than Mercedes, and that has just not been the case this season. Have Mercedes simply gone away from testing and improved the car, made upgrades, and is that Ferrari not as good as we initially thought?
I think it's a bit of both. I think Mercedes have definitely made enormous strides with the W10. I think they've done some brilliant updates, made some good steps forward, and they've got an engine update coming up as well, which is, I think, quite daunting for Ferrari and for their other rivals. With Ferrari, I think that the scope for them to try and develop was maybe a bit more limited, particularly with the front wing and the concept they went for. It was always kind of a feeling they could hit much earlier. And then the big thing is the tyres. Ferrari has struggled with so much. And even after six races, they still can't seem to understand these Pirellis. It does seem to be maybe a bit of a hangover of the issue from last year when we saw it. The races where Pirelli reduced the tread of the tyres and Ferrari they were in big trouble. I think it's a similar thing happening again, really. And that is concerning for them because they keep saying, we're learning, we're trying to get on top of these issues. But the longer that takes, the further away Mercedes is going to get. And also the more Mercedes can develop their car and understand their own issues, as there may be, and make some big, big steps forward. So they've got a long way to catch up, I think.
And how long do you think Ferrari will give it before they just turn their attention to next year? Because there's over 100 points gap between them and Mercedes already after just six races. You know, with Red Bull, Max Verstappen is doing a top job at the moment, but Pierre Gasly's not necessarily getting the points that perhaps the team would have expected. So it looks like Ferrari are going to be finishing second. I mean, the championship is really over for them, isn't it? So when do they turn their attention to next year?
I think really the sooner the better. I think they've got to maybe give it a couple more races, and if in Canada or France or Austria they can find the silver bullet that rarely, if ever, exists in Formula One, then they can maybe see a bit of hope for their year. But as things stand, Mercedes aren't going to slow down. They aren't going to start making errors left, right and centre. And Ferrari do have to be sensible. They do have to think, but let's try and turn our focus to 2020 and 2021 as well, because everyone's going to have to do this sort of balancing act between the 2 years and do that, because, yeah, as you rightly say, this championship is looking over for them. I think Lewis Hamilton on his own has scored almost as many points as Ferrari have this year, which is astonishing. And I think they've just got to try and learn from the mistakes they've made this year. But you talk to the team and you get a feeling that it's a team that's maybe a little bit too proud right now to do that. They're still saying that we're not giving up on the season. We never give up. We want to keep pushing, keep working. But realistically, I think reality will hit at some point. And they've got to think, right, the focus now is beat Red Bull, get people in the constructors, and then just turn away and look at next season and where can we fix what went so badly wrong at the start of this one.
Yeah, and I think you're spot on there with that statistic about Lewis Hamilton. He has just 2 points less than the entire Ferrari. I mean, that says it all.
Incredible.
You know, it really does say it all about the woeful start to the year for Ferrari. And I'm really shocked about this, because in 2017, you know, they had a competitive car. I would still say on the balance of the season, Mercedes had the strongest car. But last year, you know, Vettel should have won that championship. So why all of a sudden, after two seasons of progress, have they just dipped?
I think it's also a lot that Mercedes has done as well. I think Mercedes just been so good this year, because that has maybe masked a lot of what Ferrari have done and the errors that they've made. And I think that something even just as small as the tyres, but it can have such a massive, massive impact. That shows where Ferrari have gone wrong this year. Vettel said after the race in Monaco, he said that if you've got the number for the grip man, then let me know because I need more grip. And they are being very honest about the issues with this car. And I think it's a case that whereas Ferrari maybe, I guess, there's still a little bit, maybe not made the same rate of progress that they did from 2017-2018, Mercedes themselves have made just such a huge step forward in every department once again. And they've looked at the errors they made last year. They've looked at the fact that really for most of last season they did have a slower car, and they've learned from it. They've done what Ferrari needs to be moving forward, and they're coming out of it so, so strongly.
Look, there's been a rumour doing the rounds of social media. I just want to get your thoughts on this and think there's any legs in the story about Sebastian Vettel possibly retiring at the end of this season.
Yeah, I saw that floating around. I think Vettel, he's always been very, very honest. And he did an interview with The Times in Bahrain about sort of like his future and things like that. And he said that he would look at 21 and what the regulations are like. And if it still interests him, he would carry on. If not, then he would consider retiring. But I think that's true for every driver. I mean, Lewis Hamilton said the same thing. Sergio Perez has said the same thing. So everyone's kind of on a similar page there. Vettel, I'd be astonished if he did walk away at the end of this year, because I think he's got very little to gain by doing so. I think that he has put so much into this Ferrari project that he would be the man to lead them back to glory and turn them around. I think for him to walk away so soon and at such short notice as well would be a real, real surprise. But I always remember Mark Webber did an interview a long, long time ago, and he said that he always thought that Vettel would do everything early in life. He said he would get married early, he'd have kids early, he would win his world championships early, and he would retire early as well. So whenever this kind of talk about it comes up, I'm always remembering that, thinking, maybe Mark did have a bit of a point there.
And look, just finally, going back to Charles Leclerc, we all know he's a talented driver, but this is a difficult situation for him. It's his only second year in Formula 1. He's going into a big team like Ferrari, but what does he need to do in order to not let this situation get the better of him and avoid being bogged down by all the kind of turmoil that's going on, both on and off the track at Ferrari?
I think he just needs to calm down a little bit and just focus on his job and focus on what he's doing, because he has been incredible throughout his career so far, we know that. But one thing we've noticed is that he's very self-critical and he's very quick to say, oh, I'm so stupid and things like that. And I think he needs to just try and get out of that frame of mind a little bit where he can and just focus on doing the best job possible. And ultimately, that he's got to accept that if Ferrari make a mistake like they did in Monaco, there's only so much he can do to rectify that, and that he may want to be the man who pulls out this incredible display that turns everything around for the team and changes it all. But realistically, it's not to be expected of a driver only in their second season. So I think he just needs to just relax a little bit, take a few lessons from what Max Verstappen did last year after his terrible run at the start of the season with all his incidents. And just relax, let his driving be the talking, because he's enormously talented and it will come in time. So I think he'll get there in the end.
Absolutely. Look, thanks very much for joining us on the show. We always appreciate the time you give us here on Rock Sport Radio.
Pleasure as always. Thank you, guys.
That's Luke Smith from Crash.net there. And stay with us as we talk about all things MotoGP up next on Rock Sport Radio.
If you're a fan of Scottish junior football, then Just the Juniors is a must-listen for you here on Rock Sport Radio. Nobody brings you more or better coverage of the junior game on radio than Bill Kilgour and John Redmond. Unrivaled knowledge, interviews with the managers, players and people who run junior football in Scotland. Every Friday, 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. is when you can hear Scotland's flagship junior football show. Make sure you're listening. Just the Juniors on Rock Sport Radio.
Don't miss Motorpoint's Super Deal of the Week. For a limited time only, get an 18-plate Ford Focus Titanium with less than 20,000 miles from just $12,499. But hurry, when they're gone, they're gone. And don't forget, you can drive away the same day with our lightning-fast service. So, for our Deal of the Week, visit Motorpoint Glasgow today, just 2 minutes from Junction 3 of the M74. T's and C's apply. See website for details.
Quick, friendly service.
Very good service. I just left them to it.
Great job.
These are just some of the thousands of five-star Trustpilot reviews we've received at First for Lawyers. So if you've had a road traffic accident and you need an expert to fight your claim for compensation, then you can trust First for Lawyers to do a great job for you. If you've had an accident on the road, text COMPENSATION to 66077. Text COMPENSATION to 66077 now. First for Lawyers are a claims management company authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority.
The list of things you need to do gets longer at this time of year, whether that's for the house or in your business. So tick one thing off your list right now. Your septic tank could need emptied. Let Grant Henderson Tankers empty your septic tank in the home or work, farm, factory or workshop at very competitive rates. We are septic tank specialists, experienced, safe and dedicated to environmental safety with our own licensed disposal site. Find out more at wemovesh.it or call 01698 284 987. Grant Henderson Tankers. Let the experts manage your waste.
Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
Now, MotoGP heads to Mugello this weekend for the Italian Grand Prix. Marc Marquez goes into the sixth round of the season with an 8-point lead over Ducati's Andrea Dovizioso at the top of the championship. Now, Adam, do you think this is... And I know it's reasonably early in the season, but do you think this is a must-win for Dovi and Ducati?
Well, I think it certainly is. Mugello, you know, that long straight into Turn 1, very daunting for the riders, but it really does suit the characteristics of the Ducati bike. Jorge Lorenzo won there last year. He's got a strong record at this track, so I think Ducati and Dovizioso certainly will be aiming to take victory there that this weekend, because, I mean, credit to Ducati, they're only 8 points off Marc Marquez, because I have to say, this season Marc Marquez has been absolutely phenomenal. He had that big crash in the United States at Austin, Texas, while he was leading, so just think where Marquez could be if he was leading, and luckily for the rest of the riders that Marquez did have that crash, because even with that one retirement, you know, Dovi's not had a retirement yet, he's still got an 8-point advantage. So for Dovizioso, so the next couple of tracks, not only in Mugello, but going to the Circuit de Catalunya, these are two races where Ducati and Dovizioso really have to strike, because they've got to start taking points off Andrea Dovizioso, off Marc Marquez.
What have you made of Ducati's start to the season overall, Adam?
It's been solid, I'd say. It's been all right. You know, they got that first victory in Qatar, and that's a Ducati circuit more than it is a Honda. So that always gives you a key indication of where we're at in terms of Ducati's pace, where they're going to be throughout the season. So that was a big, big 25 points for Dovi. But since then, you know, when Marc Marquez... I mean, let's put it in contest here. Marc Marquez should have won the last four races in a row. You know, that is a big, big margin. So, as I said, without that one retirement, you know, Marquez would really have a really strong lead. So the next two tracks will probably decide the fate of this championship, whether Marquez is going to have it wrapped up early again, or whether we could have a nail-biter right down to the season finale in Valencia, which is what we all want.
So how does Dovi and Rins, and Rossi as well, how do these riders beat Marc Marquez? You know, where are the weak points they can look to exploit here?
Well, the Honda engine this year is very strong, and you know, at the end of the day, how do they beat Marquez? Well, they've got to work as a team, I suppose. You know, you look at Ducati, they've got Dovizioso, Petrucci. You know, the Ducatis did very well last time out at Le Mans. Three of them were inside the top four, but Marc Marquez won that Grand Prix. But for me, how do they beat them? They've got to kind of work as a team, you know, and use that advantage, because at the moment, Jorge Lorenzo just is not competitive on that Honda, so perhaps that could be a weakness. But how do you beat Marc Marquez, Andy? See if I knew the answer to that, I would be a millionaire. All the teams, you know, Ducati, Yamaha, they would be after me, so... They did say when Marquez first came into the sport that perhaps it would be consistency that the other riders would be able to beat him on, but, you know, he's just such an incredible rider, Marquez. You know, apart from one season, he's been fairly dominant in the Premier class. We still see exciting races, but Marquez, he really is a class above at the moment. He's just doing such a good job. And I think we were all hoping for Lorenzo to be competitive at that Honda team last season, and it just didn't work out or this season, so it's just not worked out so far. So that's been a bit of a damp squid, because we're maybe thinking Lorenzo would take the fight to Marquez. But for Dovizioso, look, he's 8 points in it. He wins this weekend, minimum, it's down to three. He wins in Circuit de Catalunya, minimum, he has a 2-point championship lead going to the Netherlands. So it's very much still, you know, within realms that, you know, the likes of Andrea Dovizioso and Alex Rins, you know, yes, he's a good 20 points back, but, you know, if Marquez crashes, which isn't out the realms of possibility, then you've got Dove there. You know, they can take points off Marc Marquez, so this championship is certainly, certainly not done yet.
I tell you what I find very interesting about MotoGP, not just this season, but over the last few years in comparison to Formula 1, is there's a similarity there in terms of there's a dominant driver, a dominant team, dominant rider, whatever. In the MotoGP sphere, obviously Marc Marquez has been so impressive, but the action has still been extremely competitive. It's not as if we're going up to races and going, oh, well, here we go. You know, it's still been fantastic to watch, whereas perhaps you could argue in Formula 1 that's not necessarily always been the case.
Well, exactly. I mean, MotoGP, a lot of people say we're in a golden era, and I certainly go along those lines with that. Back to your original question, how do these other guys stop Marquez? Well, the other thing is, don't let Marquez get out at front, because that's where you can sometimes get boring races, certainly at the front, because if Marquez is allowed to get into his rhythm, if he's allowed to get out into front, that's where Marquez will start to dominate the other riders. So that's very important for the likes of Dove, Rins, even the Yamahas of Rossi and Vinales, the likes of Cal Crutchlow, of course, as well, on the LCR Honda, to really make sure that they don't allow Marc Marquez to get out front. But yeah, I totally agree. The racing has been very, very strong between all the riders recently, because, you know, even if you go back to the likes of 2012, 2013, you know, it really just was a battle between the factory Hondas and the factory Yamahas. Whereas in recent years, we've saw the resurgence of Ducati, which has been fantastic for MotoGP. Suzuki came back into the sport. They've now got their first win under their belt with Alex Rins, so they're a team that's only going to improve. And you've got satellite riders who are very, very strong. You know, the rookies are having a solid season so far this year. And the other thing that we have to take into account is KTM in the future. You know, they're investing a lot of money, so we could be looking at a much stronger field in a couple of years. You know, people are saying this is the golden era. Perhaps in a few years, you know, Suzuki really will be able to mount a proper challenge, as will KTM. So it's very exciting times in MotoGP.
Adam, a lot of people have been wondering why Jorge Lorenzo has struggled on this Honda bike, I beg your pardon. What would you put it down to, though? Because we were expecting some strong displays. We've not really had that from...
No, you're right. And, you know, I say this is a very important race for Andrea Dovizioso. Well, it's also massively important for Jorge Lorenzo. And Lorenzo has a stunning record in the Premier Class at Mugello. He's got 6 wins and 9 podiums. So this is really going to be a real test for Jorge Lorenzo. He said that the team made good progress in Le Mans, and that he did with the setup of the bike, and they're much closer to the front. So he's admitted, you know, he's had similar success in Mugello. He also had success in Le Mans previously, so he's hoping to continue to improve. And I think this season, really, this race will be critical for Lorenzo's season. Because if he can put in a strong showing here, that'll give him the confidence. Lorenzo at the moment seems to be very much a confidence rider. He really needs to be in that mood, because he's not been confident. He wasn't confident on the Ducati for 18 months. And if you're not confident on a motorbike, then you're not going to be competitive on it. It's as simple as that. And it looks as if it's going to be similar with Honda. He was unlucky at the start of the season with a couple of injuries. But I think what's exciting this weekend is we know he goes well here. He won there last year. You know, can he win this year? It'll be very tough, but certainly a podium. You know, with 9 podiums, can he make it 10? I certainly think he's got a chance. So for Lorenzo, this is probably the first race where you're seeing, you know, you've had 6 wins here, 9 podiums. This is your track, effectively. Where are you on the Honda? So we'll get a proper, accurate representation of where he is.
It's amazing to think, though, that we're 5 races in and Lorenzo hasn't finished in the top 10, Adam.
Yeah, it's so disappointing. I mean, you know, we've had plenty of journalists on the show, and, you know, the common theme was it's not going to take Lorenzo as long to adapt to the Honda as it did to the Ducati. And, I mean, for Jorge and also Ducati, there must be a real frustration that just when he was getting competitive on the Ducati, you know, a couple of weeks before they'd terminated his contract because he was doing so poorly. So he's just got used to the Ducati, and now he's had to switch to the Honda. It's very, very difficult to do. So I think for Lorenzo, this weekend is crucial. If he finishes outside the top 10, it's going to be a long season. How long will Honda last? Because let's not forget, actually, Ducati are actually leading in the team standings because of Lorenzo's poor performances. And Danilo Petrucci, you know, the new rider on the factory Ducati, alongside Dovizioso, who replaced Jorge Lorenzo, he's obviously there picking up points, unlike Jorge Lorenzo. So for the factory Ducati team, they're actually leading Repsol Honda in the team standings. So that's another thing Honda have to be careful of.
Adam, I want to get your thoughts on Alex Rins and that Suzuki, because he's third in the Riders' Championship at the minute, 75 points, as you mentioned earlier. How does he approach this one?
Well, Alex Rins and Suzuki, you know, it was a disappointing result last time out in Le Mans, especially on the back of two podiums, so worst performance of the year. I think, really, for Suzuki, where they go now, they've got to kind of pick up a few more podiums. I think it's very difficult for Suzuki to mount a championship bid, but I suppose, you know, we'll see what happens over the course of the rest of the season. I'm delighted to say we are now joined by Simon Patterson from Motorcycle News, and we are just talking there a little bit about Suzuki got that first win. You know, can they mount a title fight?
I don't think they've got it this year to mount a title fight, guys. Alex Rins has struggled almost in every other race this year with his qualifying. He can do fast lap after fast lap on race pace, but whenever it comes to doing one really, really fast lap to get a good grid position, it just doesn't seem to come together for him, which is partly the nature of the way that the Suzuki works. It's a very comfortable, smooth bike to ride, but sometimes they're the hardest bikes to bite the screen, as the guys say, and do one quick lap. You know, he started in Le Mans from 19th place. Whenever you're that far back, you're not going to win the race. And until he can get that problem solved, it's really, really hard to look at him as a championship contender. The other problem is, obviously, that we've got Marc Marquez leading the championship. He looks almost unstoppable already this year. It could well be that we're in a position where it's going to be a battle for second place this year, not who can win the championship.
Well, we're just saying that, Simon, actually, because really for Marquez, it should be four wins from the past four races had he not had that unfortunate crash for us, certainly for him in Texas. But for the rest of the riders, at least that's kept them within close reach. The likes of Andrea Dovizioso, I mean, we're talking on the show earlier, must-win race, I think it is this weekend for Ducati and Dovi. Would you go along with that?
100%. Dovi is probably the only man that realistically can mount a bit of a title challenge on Mark. But to do that, he needs to beat him here. He needs to beat him next time out in Barcelona. And he probably needs to beat him in Assen as well whenever we go there in 6 weeks' time. If he can't do that, it looks like it's game over. If he can do that, he did it in 2017 against Mark. And that really kick-started his championship campaign that year because Mark had a good start of the year. Dovi had a bit of a slow start back then. And then whenever Dovi got going, he really pushed him up to the final round. So it's too early to say it's completely over and done. But like you say, Dovi needs to win the next two.
Jorge Lorenzo, we were all hoping at the start of the year that he could take the fight to Marc Marquez, or certainly towards the mid part and the final part of the season that we'd be competitive. This is one of a few tracks where you would say, you know, Lorenzo's got an extremely impressive record around Mugello. How do you see Lorenzo getting on this weekend?
I think to see Lorenzo at the front battling with Marquez is a little bit too soon to see it happen this weekend. We know that Jorge is a very slow learner. I don't think you'll be too offended to hear us saying that. We saw him in Ducati. It took him nearly 18 months to get to grips with the bike to start winning. He's made a quicker adaptation to the Honda, but he's also been riding injured since basically the first time he jumped on the bike. You know, the tests at the end of the last year, he had injuries from the end of his time with Ducati. Then he broke his wrist just before we went into pre-season testing. He cracked a couple of ribs in Qatar at the first round of the championship. So he is pretty much back to full fitness now. But that means that he's still only now getting to the point where he can start really getting comfortable with the bike, really understanding how the Honda works, really understanding how much you have to push the bike under braking, especially. You know, that's the strength of the Honda. But it's always been something that Lorenzo's not been particularly good at. We've always seen him being someone that maintains corner speed, that rides a really smooth line, rode the bike the way that the Yamaha needed to be rode, which is why he was so successful on it, and probably why he was so unsuccessful on the Ducati in particular. He can do better on the Honda, but he just needs a bit more time to do it.
Do you think maybe at least we'll see a season best result for Lorenzo this weekend?
Well, to be frank, it wouldn't be hard to see it. You know, the guy still hasn't finished inside the top 10 on the bike. He's getting there. He's definitely improving race by race. He sounds a lot more positive after every race. And he said after the last race in Le Mans that he'd made a big breakthrough with the bike, that he suddenly felt a lot more confident with it, a lot more comfortable on it. So, yeah, I think to say that he's on for a season best this weekend would be... I think it would be worth putting a bit of money on that one.
Want to get your thoughts on Yamaha, Simon. Miserable year last season. You know, looks to be signs of improvement for sure, but still a way off the likes of Dovi and the Ducati and, of course, Marquez and the Honda.
Yeah, it's been an absolutely torrid 2.5 years for the Honda, or for the Yamaha guys. You know, it really looks now like every time they solve a problem, they find a new one that's been hidden by the old one. They've managed to get a grip finally with the issues that they've been having with tyres burning out in the second half of races, but to do that, it cost them some of the acceleration potential of the bike. They struggled all season trying to find how to fix that problem. They finally fixed it for this year, but lo and behold, the cost of fixing it has been that now they've not got enough top speed because they've had to cut horsepower to make the engine smoother. Rossi was dead last in the speed trap times after the entire weekend at Le Mans. That's because of our rules in MotoGP, because of the way that we seal the engines at the start of the season and then they can't be changed. That's something that they're going to have to carry for the rest of the year. This is a circuit where obviously Rossi has a huge amount of history, but it's really, really tough to see him being competitive here this weekend, just because it's also got one of the biggest, longest, fastest straights in the calendar. Cal Crutchlow said in his debrief in his media scrum this afternoon that he fully expects to see a new record set this weekend and someone take a MotoGP bike over 225 miles an hour for the first time. That is really, really going to cost Yamaha. The flip side of it is that it means that there are still tracks where they can be competitive. I'm sure Rossi and Vinales are absolutely rubbing their hands at the thought of going somewhere like Phillip Island or Assen with the bike that they've got now. But the flip side of that, it's probably going to be a season where the target will be getting Rossi back on the top step of the podium, taking a few race wins, and then seeing where they stand next year with another revised engine if they're going to try a title challenge.
And speaking of Cal Crutchlow, had a sensational start to the year in Qatar. I don't think anyone saw that podium coming. Since then, he's been quite unfortunate, hasn't he? How would you assess Crutchlow's start to the year?
Yeah, the podium in Qatar was just sensational. You know, his first race back after shattering his ankle into sort of 8 different pieces at the end of last season. Coming straight back, having been out, missed a load of testing, and just bounces straight back. It was pretty impressive. Since then, it's just been bad luck, misfortune, few stupid little mistakes, you know, a jump start penalty that was questionable at best, a few crashes that he didn't really need to make. But it looks now like he's starting to do what Cal does and settle into a bit of a rhythm again. Le Mans was a poor result. He finished in 9th. It was a result, and that was something that he needed. He went into the weekend with a little bit of, feeling that he needed just something to ground him, something to launch the second third of the season off. And I think he's got it now. I've just been talking to him tonight, just before I caught up with you guys. He's relaxed. He's comfortable. This is a track where he's got good record. This is where he took his first ever MotoGP podium back in 2013. So it's not. It's not unlikely that we're going to see him take a few more wins this year, that he can be back in contention now that he's in the groove again.
It certainly would be great to see Crutchlow on the top step of the podium, that's for sure. A few other riders I want to get your thoughts on, starting with Danilo Petrucci, Fattori Ducati. Strong result last time out at Le Mans, and, good inter-team battle, shall we say, with Dovizioso. Some close shaves as well there, but he'll be hoping to build on that strong result this weekend.
Yeah, he's in a bit of an unusual position in that he really kind of needs a good result this weekend. Ducati have made no bones about the fact that him and Jack Miller are very much fighting for that seat on the second factory Ducati for next year. Both of them are pretty much the only front-running guys that are on one-year contracts. So it's all to play for between the two of them. Danilo had a good result in Le Mans, yeah. Third position right behind his teammate. But the problem he had was that Miller, on a slightly worse Ducati, slightly less support, was right behind him in fourth. And you have to think that if the factory start looking at who they really want on the bike, and the choices between a slightly older guy who's doing slightly better on a better bike, or a young, passionate, fired-up kid on a bike that's worse, they're going to go with Miller, even if he's just not quite on the pace. Petrucci has a good record here. Took a podium here 2 years ago, cried his eyes out in the podium like only an Italian can whenever they score a podium in Mugello. But that's the form that he needs to really latch on to now. You know, it was good to see him in the podium in Le Mans, but he needs to do it this weekend. He needs to do it again in 2 weeks' time in Catalunya at the circuits where the Ducati goes well. He needs to prove that he really deserves that spot. The other thing is, we've never really seen him under pressure like that before, so it's going to be interesting to see how he responds to pressure. Some riders absolutely feed off it. You put them under pressure and they do their best work. So if he can manage to do that, then it'll be interesting to see what comes.
And Simon, finally, who else has caught your eye this season? Some impressive performances from the rookies.
Yeah, absolutely. I was lucky enough just last week after Le Mans to head to Andorra, a little tiny principality in between Spain and France, and spend a little bit of time with Fabio Quartararo, the Petronas Yamaha sensation that we've had this year. You know, the rest of the rookies are doing a great job, but unfortunately for them, Quartararo was making them all look bad by smashing out pole positions and fastest laps and, topping tests, things like that. There's something quite special about the kid. He's only 20 years old. He was only 19 when we started the season. He's an old head and young shoulders. He's very, very switched on. He knows what he needs to do. But he's also quite relaxed, having quite good fun with the team, always up for a laugh and a joke. Actually, without completely trying to jinx him, almost reminds me a little bit of a young Valentino Rossi in the way he approaches race and the way he approaches life. For me, there's going to be a bit of a battle at the end of next year to get his name on a piece of paper to make sure that he's on a factory bike in 2021.
Simon, thanks very much for joining us on the show. Always a pleasure to chat MotoGP with you.
Absolutely fantastic to be with you, mate. Thank you very much.
Simon Patterson there from Motorcycle News, speaking to us here on Rock Sport Radio.
All right, moving on to the rally stage now, and we're all set for the next event in the World Rally Championship, with the action heading to Portugal over the next few days. Sergeant Seb Ogier leads the way at the top of the driver standings on 122 points, just 10 points clear of Toyota's Ott Tanak, with Hyundai Thierry Neuville third on 110 points. Well, joining us on pole position to talk more about the event is, of course, rally expert David Halley. And David, hard to believe that this is the seventh round of the season.
Halfway through the year already, as far as events go, yes. We've arrived here, and we've got two conjoined events again between here and Sardinia in the next couple of weeks. So, yeah, it's an exciting time in the middle of the championship, and that man Ogier at the front again. But the others behind him are squeezing him, I think.
And I think this comes at a good time for Tanak, I feel, because if he can take some points off Neuville, that could set him up nicely for the second half of this season.
Absolutely. It is that time of year where we start, believe it or not, looking towards the end of the season, nearly halfway done. And then we see what happens for the second half. Tanak, winner last time out, and yes, I picked him, as did you, and we'll come to that shortly. But he's on it. He's been on it for a couple of years. I think it's time we did have somebody's name on that trophy that isn't Seb. I'm very keen to have that happen sooner rather than later, I must say.
And David, you know, staying with Toyota just for a moment or so, I've got a lot of sympathy for Chris Meek, because for me there always seems to be something that happens when he's out there this season. I feel like he's not had a fair crack at things, but maybe what that does highlight is that Yaris is pretty fragile.
It's Chris, unfortunately. I just don't know where his luck has disappeared to. When he was in Citroën before he got sacked unceremoniously, he's either incredibly quick or having an accident. There's very little in between from Chris, and he's not had many accidents this year, but as you say, things happen. He has punctures. Nobody else seems to have quite the number of punctures he has. Mm. He swears blind he's not hit anything, but he seems to promote punctures, and he's just the world's most unluckiest rally driver, I think.
And of course Thierry Neuville comes into this event off the back of that big crash last time out in Chile. I dare say that's not a bad time of the season to take a retirement, though, because he is still, of course, just 12 points off Seb Ogier.
Of course, there's never a good time to have an accident, but he's had that accident. Has he got it out of his system? It was a new event. It looked, as we said before, it looked a very spectacular accident, but it just rolled itself into a ball, and he was dizzy but completely unharmed, and that's what the cars are designed to do. It won't affect him one bit. He will be on it from the outset here again in Portugal and wanting to get back into the championship lead, which he held before his whoopsie last time out.
Now, obviously, there's been a lot of talk about Seb Loeb replacing Andreas Mikkelsen for this one, and we touched on that in last week's show, David, but do you think that Mikkelsen's time is maybe up at Hyundai?
I think a lot depends on what happens this weekend. Sebastian Loeb is traditionally more a tarmac driver. He did rally Chile just to put a gravel event in, finished third, showed great promise. He'll go far, that lad, I think. But the Hyundai have picked him for this event. Yes, it means that Mikkelsen's sitting on the sidelines again, which he'll not be happy about, but that's the way of the world, unfortunately. And if Loeb can come out with a good result from this, I, as I said last week, I think we might see him doing more rounds of the championship. If he's enjoying himself, I think he'll want to have more shots at it.
And David, just looking at the route itself for this event, Friday is of course quite different to last year, so it's another event where the co-drivers are having to work hard to ensure that they're providing the best possible notes that they can. But how much of this event is going to come down to being on the right tyre compound at the correct time?
Yes, difficult one with the two-tyre compounds they have, hard and soft. Do you go on the soft and try and keep them alive during the segment that you're on, or do you go on the hard and lose that little bit of grip? It's it happens in a lot of the events, this choice of tyre. We're back in Arganil on Friday, tomorrow, for the first time since 2001. So, as you say, it's not an area that most of the drivers know. They haven't been there for a long time. So the co-drivers will be working with the drivers during the reconnaissance to get the notes right. They recce at much lower speeds than they actually compete at. So, as we saw in Chile, Thierry's accident possibly came from a right over a crest that was not quite as he saw it at 30 miles an hour, and when he did it at 100 miles an hour, the car flew that little bit further. So it's looking at these things and these types of corners. We do, of course, on Sunday we have Pfaff to consider, that where all the spectators come out. There is the big jump that everybody knows about, but the stage leading up to that is a very fast sweeping stage surrounded by tens of thousands of spectators. So a great event, a great day out on Sunday for the Portuguese fans. And we'll see the cars flying, and it's not an artificial jump, it's a real jump on a real stage. None of these daft things that they put in now and again.
David, do you think this could potentially be the event that kickstarts Esa Pekka Lappi's season? Because he went on a good run after Portugal last year, but I just really feel for him at the minute.
I don't think that car's very easy to drive. I think that the car is obviously very similar to the car that Chris Meek had troubles with last year. It takes somebody with the genius of Seb Ogier to get that car pointing in the right direction at all time. And even he has been quoted time and again pushing Citroën to keep developing the car, because the car, I think the car is being driven by a genius rather than the car being absolutely the class of the field at the moment. And Issa-Pekka Lappi is struggling with that car. It's not as kind to him as the Toyota was. And he's still a young man in the early stages of his career. So he's got a lot to learn, and he's got a difficult car that he's trying to tame.
Do you think there's a bit of pressure on him as well, because there's the likes of Mads Osberg as well, of course, part of the kind of Citroën family? I mean, these guys will be keen to get a bit of seat time and back in a World Rally car.
Again, yes, Mads is doing the WRC2 Pro program in the R5 car. He's doing very well in that, taking the fight in that series. So I'm sure he would love to get back in a World Rally car. He hasn't been in a factory car for a couple of years. He had his own car in 2017, but I'm sure he'll be poking and prodding at the management, going, "Oi, give me a shot." If they had the money, I'm sure he would be in the car. But as we know, Citroën spent all their money in one direction, and now they don't have the budget to run three cars.
Mm. And David, one driver making his World Rally debut this weekend, Gus Greensmith for M Sport. What can we expect from him at this event?
He is so excited about this. He's been in the WRC2 program for a couple of years. He's been leading that championship, and now he's getting a shot in a world car. And it is a different animal altogether. It might look the same. It might be a Ford Fiesta, but jings, a World Rally car is so beyond an R5. He's done quite a bit of testing in the car. He's been out. The team have been out, and all three drivers have been in the car. And he's managed to get his head round the speed difference, and he says that the world car does a lot more of the job for you, but it's happening so much faster. So he has to learn to be not quite so aggressive. An R5 car needs to be grabbed by the scruff of the neck and thrown down the stage. If you try that in a World Rally car, it won't respond to it. You need to be a little bit more subtle with it.
Do you think he'll take a little bit of inspiration from Timo Suninen here, because he was in a similar position and now he's got a World Rally drive?
Of course, that's every rally driver's dream is to get into a factory or supported World Rally Car seat. And Gus has proven himself at R5, so it is like moving up the divisions. You're doing quite well at one level in any sport, and you're looking to get to the next level. The next level is the top level, so it's a place that all drivers are aiming for, and he's made it there for this weekend. Mm. Let's hope he can keep it on the island and go forward and get some more events.
And David, staying with Suninen for just a moment, I think he's shown a little bit of consistency across the last few events, and of course this is him returning to the scene of where he took his first podium finish so far in his career last season.
Again, yes, of course, and every event is an experience, a new experience. He's obviously never seen the first day's stages, but you go to an event, you get comfortable, you're getting seat time in the car. We talk about that all the time, and he's going back to events he has done before in that car. Previously, when we've talked about Timo, he's done the event before, but in an R5, we're now getting to the events that he's done more of in a World Rally car. So we should begin to see an increase in speed, I think. He had a bit of a whoopsie early on in the season, was told to not go quite so fast and keep it sensible, and maybe it's time to let him off the leash. And within the same team, we've got Elfin, again, who's looking to increase his pace a bit and hopefully get to where he needs to be as well.
Mm. David, I think Elfin's had a pretty impressive season, because you know, when you put the retirements in Monte Carlo and Argentina to one side, obviously Corsica was a sore one, very much the moral victor there. But I think it's been an important season for him, with obviously Ogier elsewhere now. This is a chance for him to shine in a car that we know is competitive.
he's the team leader, effectively, so it's him, his turn to show what he can do, and he learned a lot from having Seb in the team for the last couple of years, and he's putting that to good use. Yes, he's had a couple of incidents, as a lot of drivers have, and but yes, he's got this. He won Wales Rally GB a couple of years ago. He knows how to win. He just needs to put it together and do the job this year, which would be nice.
David, there's one story I want to get your thoughts on that I've not seen covered too much elsewhere, so I'm hoping you can kind of shed a bit of light on this for us. It's coming from the French and the Italian authorities approving the use of the these current spec cars as well. What's the story there?
When the new formula started in 2017, the FIA diktat was that World Rally cars were only to be used on World Rally car events, World Rally Championship events, and they were only to be driven by experienced drivers. There was a concern that these cars were so much faster than that had gone before, that they didn't want to be faced with the PR disaster of an accident causing problems to either driver or spectator. And that was a concern that the FIA and their insurers had. So the cars were restricted. Now, earlier in the year, the Finnish local, the National Sporting Authority allowed the use of World Rally cars in their national championship, and there are Fiesta and Toyota and Hyundai out there competing, and the Italians and the French have now decided that they will allow current spec World Rally cars to compete in their championships. So this opens up the market in World Rally cars, and particular of importance to N-Sport, who are not a manufacturer team, as we know. They're a business that is in the business of selling racing and rally cars. They sold an awful lot of the previous generation World Rally car Fiesta, and it now opens up a bit of a market to those with a suitably large wallet or large pile of cash down the back of the sofa to be able to buy the latest spec car.
Good evening, David. You know what time it is when I come on the airwaves, prediction time.
Yes, indeed.
We're struggling for time, so just need one word answer.
Am I going first again, or, yeah, or will we let him go
first? I'll be generous. I'll go first, right? I'll go first, not Tannock.
I'm going to go Seb Loeb just to throw a curveball in.
Right, okay. We'll see how that one goes on. Right, David, thank you very much, as always, for your time on Pole Position.
No problem.
That's rally expert David Harley there. And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for on Pole Position this week. Another busy show, Adam, but yeah, that's us coming to a close. And we'll be back, of course, from 8 o'clock next Thursday night to do it all again. We'll have plenty to chat about there as well, I'm sure. Thanks to Adam for your help, as always, to our guests, and to you for joining us as well. Stay tuned for the Rock Zone coming up next, right here on Rock Sport Radio. Some great songs on the way.
Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.